across the seven skies. See, a pure heart never lies. The words you learn will never earn. It's time to think and wonder why. Stars above will always be a shining guide for us to see. And when I doubt, I'll have no doubt, but still I wonder why. Digging through our pages past, wondering how the truth will last. God's in control is what I found. I think I'll try this time around. And no one really feels the path I seek. And no one's gonna care as much as me. And no one seems to know our history. And stories are told for the world to see. Our past unfold, their glory is unique, we're told. The stories mark a precious past, but do we question why? A quest for truth can never be a lot I've faked inside of me. I walk in shoes I've never felt, only then I'll sure know why. They tell me, just make up your mind, the path I seek just needs a sign. The end is where I wanna be, which way I go is up to me. And no one really feels the path I seek, and no one's gonna care as much as me.
Good night to all listeners of Iran Radio. This is Tehran, the Iranian capital, and I'm Asma, your presenter for the next hour. We'll start this hour's lineup with our varied radio productions feature. That will be followed by Insight into the Holy Quran. The program presents a short exegesis or explanation of the ayahs of the Holy Quran. And we round up this hour's programs with Islamic laws. The program focuses on Islamic laws and adopts a practical approach to the subject. Stay with us for the next hour.
Sistan and Balochistan is populated by over 9,000 villages. The village of Ghalanor dates back to the Qajar period, and since this area isn't prone to earthquakes, the adobe houses have managed to survive for about 150 years. Isn't that amazing?
About 40 kilometers from the city of Zobel, this village was originally built on top of a hill and witnessed the migration of the villages of Old Fort. In fact, that's where it gets its name, Kaleno, which means new fort. Kaleno was built on high ground to protect its occupants from flood, since the varying amount of the flowing water of the Hamu River has always caused different problems for the people living in the Sistan Basin. But that's not the only thing the architects of this village had up their sleeves. During the Qajar period in the 18th and 19th centuries, different regions were managed by overlords or khans. The most eye-catching structure here is the two-story adobe castle of the Khan of the region. It was built at the entrance of the village and around a small hill, so the top of the hill is the floor of the second story. The village is currently being restored and is going to be turned into an ecotourism village. Kilometers from Kaleno lies a mysterious and ancient city referred to over the past 200 to 300 years as Dahani Ghulaman, or Gateway of the Slaves. Dahani Ghulaman is the largest Achaemenian site in the entire eastern section of Iran that has been dated back to between the 4th and the 6th century BC. More importantly, it's the only Achaemenid site that may hold within its depths the secrets of the lifestyle of the ordinary people living at that time. Built in the wilderness, away from the imperial capital, even with the alignment of buildings roughly in a straight line, running southwest to northeast along the edge of water supplies, the site was only inhabited for a brief period of a century or a century and a half, and was abandoned as a result of natural forces that have always determined the survival and migration of urban settlements in the arid region of Sistan.
The entire site was covered by sand. After it was dug up about 50 years ago in the 1960s, the layout of this ancient city was studied extensively by archaeologists from around the world. And it seems that they all came to a similar conclusion. The precise architecture and great harmony in the design of Dahani Ghulaman suggests that it was built with urban planning in mind about 2,500 years ago.
Geometric studies on this site have revealed 27 major structures and an additional 23 buildings, most of which have not yet been unearthed. It was believed that the Achaemenids used architectural plans only in the construction of palaces and important buildings, such as the royal residences of Pasargadae, Persepolis, Susa, as well as Dasht Gohar. But it seems that the people of Dahani Ghulaman even prepared an architectural plan for the construction of their alleys and ordinary houses. The urban planning, the architecture, the temple, the location and size of what remains of this ancient city have led scholars to believe that it was a satrapal capital or something very similar to it in character. Studies into the origins of the hearths, fireplaces and altars have tried to reveal their purpose since they have a unique architecture. Were they used for animal sacrifices since animal blood was found on the altars? What kind of rituals were performed here? All these studies have tried to find answers to the many questions that arose 40 years ago with the unearthing of the site and have never been completely answered, even to this day. Standing atop the nearby hill that gives you an overview of the site, you can see lakes filled with a considerable amount of water around it.
The Chaimime reservoirs in the south of Zobel are three big lakes that are the second most important water storage reservoirs in the region. The water stored in these big lakes is used to irrigate the Sistan Plain and to provide drinking water for the cities of Zobel and Zahedan.
Trees were planted all around the lakes by the University of Zobel to prevent dust from falling into the water. This is Golnar Farnoodi for Iran.
Behind this beautiful old wooden door lies an ancient civilization, a wealth of cultural, artistic, and religious jewels that portray the civilization of a nation.
The Qom Astana Museum, located in the city of Qom, right near the holy shrine of Fatima Masuma, sister of Imam Riza, opened up its doors to the public back in 1935. The museum has an area of 1,000 square meters with two floors hosting two exhibition halls. More than 1,000 artifacts and objects of artistic, cultural and historical value are displayed here. These treasures belong to different periods in history, from the 1st and 2nd millennium BC to the Islamic era in the country. The museum displays a wide range of objects and artifacts, varying from paintings, chinaware, ceramics and pottery, to priceless handmade rugs, glassware and precious Qurans.
Museum near to the shrine of Fatima Masura. It's wonderful to look around this museum, particularly to look at the carpet, beautiful carpet, and with the silk, beautifully designed. And also I look around some other places to look at the Quran, the oldest Quran from the 9th century to the present time. It's amazing to keep those kind of like traditional symbolic teachings of Prophet Muhammad.
The crown jewel of Iran's handicraft industry is its beautiful handmade rugs and carpets. Excavations in Iran have revealed that this art dates back to the 1st and 2nd millennium BC. The treasured silk rugs in this museum are valuable for their extraordinary designs, rich combination of colors, and excellent texture. One of the main features of Islamic architecture is the gorgeous glazed tiles that decorate the interior and exterior of the buildings. This art form reached new heights during the 14th century when the Timurid Empire ruled the country. The oldest tiles in this museum belong to the Seljuk era, some 12 centuries ago.
Where do you think beautiful doors opened up to? There must have been a beautiful heaven behind these doors that inspired the artist to create wonders on these beautiful creations.
The decorated doors displayed here date back to different time periods, but all adorned beautifully with different artistic techniques. Some are decorated with the art of marquetry, wood inlaying and wood carving with delicate pieces of ivory, bone, brass, gold and silver sections. Others are made with metal, embellished with inscriptions written by the best calligraphers of the time.
Size isn't really an issue when it comes to narrating history. Some items here in this museum are quite small in size, but great and precise narrators that reveal historical facts.
Museums are the spiritual and cultural treasures of a nation that clearly display the wisdom, intelligence, and artistic abilities of the past generations. These jewels are ever eternal. Hoda Lezgi for Iran.
Bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, hello and welcome. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll have a look at some of the contents of Surah Ankabut. So now let's listen to the 41st verse again.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
مثل الذين اتخذوا من دون الله أولياء كمثل العنكبوت اتخذت بيتا وإن أوهن البيوت لبيت العنكبوت لو كانوا يعلمون.
The example of those who take allies other than Allah is like that of the spider who takes a home. And indeed, the weakest of homes is the home of the spider, if they only knew.
So, brothers and sisters, we said that the previous verses were talking about the painful and actually sad fate of those arrogant, self-loving pagans, and their ending was mentioned. And now in this verse we have a parable. مَثَلُ الَّذِينَ اتَّخَذُوا مِن دُونِ اللَّهِ أَوْلِيَاءَ كَمَثَلِ الْعَنْكَبُوتِ. The parable of those who take guardians beside Allah is as the parable of the spider. اتَّخَذَتْ بَيْتًا, that makes for itself a house. وَإِنَّ أَوْهَنَ الْبُيُوتِ لَبَيْتُ الْعَنْكَبُوتِ. And verily, the frailest of all houses is the house of the spider. So, we said that this is a very interesting and expressive parable, and this is a very comprehensive one at the very same time. Why? Because when you look deeper, when you actually investigate further, you understand that the house of Ankabut is very strange. The spider's web are so weak, the materials are so weak, and this is not something to be called bait or house, because for a house to be a house, at least we need some, actually, something to be called roof. We need some doors, we need some ceilings, but none of them does this have. So, even the materials that are used in making this house, they are so weak. And if a mild wind blows, it will tear it away. If a few drops of rain fall on it, they destroy it completely. The least flame of fire burns it. It will torn up. It will be torn up, actually, even with a little dust, and it will hang on the ceiling. That's how we have all actually experienced this quality of the house of the spider ribs. The false objects of worship of this group, these pagans, have neither any profit nor harm, nor can remove any difficulty, nor can be a place of refuge for anyone. That's why they're not called a house. On the day of affliction, they benefit nothing and no one. So it is true that this house not only is a resting place for the spider with its long legs, but also a snare for hunting insects and earning food. While comparing it with the houses of other animals and insects, it is very weak, very, very unstable. So, dear listeners, now that we talked about what the nature of this Baytul Ankabut is, we understand this parable better. Those who choose a support from other than the Almighty Allah, their support is as the web of spider. The crown and throne of persons like Pharaoh, the endless wealth of individuals such as Qarun, the castles and treasures of the kings, they are all the likes of webs of a spider. Why? Because in comparison with the Almighty Allah, although they are called something like benefit, I mean, the spider web is something like a house for the spider itself, but when you compare it with other kinds of houses, other kinds of nests for other animals, it's nothing. So that's why these kings, these pharaohs, these qaruns, these castles, these treasures, they are weak, they are unstable and unreliable, and they are totally and absolutely ephemeral before the storm of events. And the history also shows us that none of these things can be the support of man. But those who rely on their faith and trust in Allah, they have relied on a firm and strong support. Because the verse of the Quran says, فَمَنْ يَكْفُرْ بِالطَّاغُوتِ وَيُؤْمِنْ بِاللَّهِ, the one who negates طاغوت, the one who believes in Allah, فَقَدْ اسْتَمْسَكَ بِالْعُرْوَةِ الْوُثْقَى, surely he is the one who has chosen something firm to rely on. He is the one who has relied on a firm and strong support. It is also necessary to note that through the house of a spider and its webs, we can understand this fact that although this is house, although these webs are used as proverb for its weakness, that is one of the wonders of the world, of creation also. Because paying attention to it makes man more acquainted with the greatness of the world. We are not ignorant of it at the very same time. But what we are talking about is the comparison, is the kind of parable that has been used in this verse. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode as well. We'll discuss more regarding this 41st verse, God willing, in the next episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always work for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
The earth and the heavens begin to sing. The angels celebrate the birth of a king. A king who outshines the stars of the night. A beacon of hope. You guide us with your blessings of God upon you is my prayer. The earth
and the heavens begin to sing. This day we celebrate the birth of a king.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me, proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away, proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed, smiling he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad Hossein's program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the studio.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. We have been discussing some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature in the past episodes, and we are going to actually continue along the same line by asking you more questions of that nature based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Let me begin our episode with this question. You know, somebody asked us, our neighborhood mosque was rebuilt a while ago. In the rebuilding process, a basement was added, which was initially used as a prayer hall, but was later rented out and is now being used as a restaurant. Is this repurposing permissible?
Right. Of course, this is one of the most frequently asked questions. I know that there are some mu'mineen, some people who want to build another floor on top of their mosques, or they want to create an additional space, allocating that space for any other purposes,
mm-hmm.
while that space belongs to the mosque, it is part of the mosque. So basically, it's not permissible to repurpose the land or the part of the mosque which belongs, which is part of the mosque and which belongs to the mosque. The additional floors added to the pre-existing mosque,
uh-huh.
whether the top floors or a basement that formerly the mosque lacked actually, are deemed consecrated. They are deemed part of the mosque, and it is not actually permissible to lend them or to repurpose them for non-devotional uses,
uh-huh.
like using it as a restaurant or using it as a club for kids to come
yes.
and play sports,
uh-huh.
or any other. Some people might want to rent out that part of the mosque for a supermarket,
yes.
to be used as a supermarket. So that's not allowed. Even it will generate some kind of money or revenue for
yes.
the for the mosque,
yes,
but it's not permissible to change or to repurpose the land or the ground or the floor of the mosque. None of the scholars, as far as I know, because it's a waqf property, and waqf property cannot be changed, cannot be repurposed at all, and it should remain. It should be used constantly and continuously for the very purpose for which it was endowed initially.
Uh-huh. Is the formula pronounced for a masjid, for a mosque, in fact, limited to that area where everybody offers his prayer, or it also includes and incorporates the yard around it?
Well, it depends on the person who recites the formula and all
uh-huh.
the people, or maybe on the endeavor.
Yes.
Okay, the person who does waqf. We call them waqif, okay? So the waqif, the person who endows the land and consecrates it
yes.
as a part of the mosque. So he can say, okay, this, for example, 100 square meters,
yes,
should be dedicated and exclusively used for as a mosque, and then the remaining part should be used as Husseiniyah, where people, ladies, might come in while they are not in the state of ritual impurity, ritual purity. So it depends on the intention of the donor or the endower.
I see. Okay, thank you very much. Let's take a short break and then we'll be back and continue our program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Stay tuned.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, yeah, Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah. Let me go straight, cause I need you.
Welcome back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Sawidar as the speaker. We are speaking about some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature according to fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Sheikh Sawid, can we perform wudu or ghusl if we have something on our hair, like a spray, for example, hairspray, a kind of glue or other, you know, styling products, basically?
Right. Well, it depends on the hairspray.
Yes.
Whether it forms a barrier or not, whether it is a kind of glue. If it indeed is a glue, is forms a barrier, and if it sticks to the scalp or to the skin of your head, then that will definitely form an obstruction. It will not allow water to penetrate the through the hair and reach the skin. So for wudu and for ghusl to be valid, it's necessary to remove all the barrier. And of course, if hair styling products, as you mentioned, are water impervious, that is, they do not allow water to pass through, and thus preventing water from breaching the hair, they must be removed before starting the wudu and ghusl. With regard to wudu, of course, the area required for rubbing the head is very little, as even the least amount of rubbing, even if it is only an inch in length, is sufficient. So if there is such a minimal area of the upper part of the head that is clear of the water impervious substance, and there is no such substance there on that one very small space in front of your head, there's no problem. And it's not necessary to remove the substance, because there is small space left without the glue, without the hairspray, or without any barrier. So you can wipe over that part of your forehead, and that will be enough.
I see.
So also, instead of rubbing one's wet hand on the hair, one could actually part the hair in the middle.
Yes.
Okay, divide the hair in the middle.
Yes.
And rub the scalp, thus applying moisture directly to the skin. In which case, of course, one need not remove the water, that substance, substance in question.
And should that parting actually be in the middle part of the skull?
Yeah, that's the front
part.
Or it
could be actually any part of the head?
It cannot be behind your head or top of your head. It should be somewhere in front, the front part of your head.
Mm.
So anywhere in the front part of your head. If you can divide your hair and leave a space, a small, create a space where you can make water, the moisture reach the skin,
yes,
that's enough.
I see. Thank you very much. Let's take another break and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Don't go anywhere.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Welcome back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Mohammed Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are still speaking about some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature according to fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Well, Sheikh Javid, if we women, you know, or even men sometimes are wearing mascara, right?
Right.
You know, if we are wearing such a substance, do we need to wipe it off before performing the ablution of wudu or ghusl of any sort of these ritual cleansing? And if so, how well do we need to wipe it off? You know, does the color actually prevent the valid performance of ablution? I mean, that kind of color that remains under and around the eyes, even after thoroughly washing our mascara off, and that lacks any tangible substance.
Well, the color does not form a barrier. Sometimes you apply henna, for example,
yes,
to your hands. The color remains there for 1 month, for 2 months.
Yes.
The color itself does not form any barrier. What makes, what creates actually a barrier is the substance.
Mm.
The substance. There should be no substance on your scalp or on your eyebrows, and on your hands and the wuzu parts. Generally speaking, yes, the mascara might create that impediment, barrier. Of course, it leaves a dark color there, right?
Yes.
But that color is not considered to be substance.
Mm-hmm.
So before making wudu, we need to remove the substances left, and the substances which is there because of applying mascara to the eyebrows or maybe to the hair. So it depends. Maybe on the skin, it might the substances might be left there. So it's necessary to make sure it's necessary for someone who applies mascara to make sure that there's no substance on his or on her skin,
yeah,
before making wudu or before performing ghusl.
And obviously, if the mascara is made of natural stuff, then would it be actually water permeable or impermeable?
Again, it has to be decided by that very person himself.
Mm.
Because we cannot give a straightforward answer, right?
Right.
So there could be different types of mascara, and some of them could prevent water from breaching the skin. Some of them may not. Some of them may not. So in order for an individual to make sure he or she, and generally we should use she because ladies use mascara, she should check herself and see whether water has reached her skin or not. Okay.
Yes.
If she is certain that water has reached or reaches the skin, so there's nothing she should do. That's okay.
Uh-huh.
The mascara, the color left does not form a barrier.
I see. On a very quick note, actually, I might mention something or add.
Yes.
Regarding the color, you said the color of the mascara is not that agent which, in fact, acts as a or functions as a barrier, right?
Right.
To the skin when you are making an ablution of wuzu or ghusl. But sometimes, you know, the color of paint actually is water impermeable. So obviously it creates a kind of barrier, and a person like a painter who's always working,
yes,
with the paint,
you're
right, they have to remove it before, yeah, performing ablution.
Paint or oil.
Yes.
Okay.
any barriers.
Fat.
Yes.
There are substances, okay, on the skin, yes, and they form barrier.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Sheikh. That was Sheikh Javid explaining and answering my jurisprudential questions of miscellaneous nature based on fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei in the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. This is Muhammad Javad signing off.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Good morning to all listeners from around the world. You're tuned in to Iran Radio, coming to you from Tehran, and I'm Asma, your host for the next hour. We start this hour's lineup with a radio productions feature. In this program, we broadcast excerpts from the speeches of well-known and reputable Islamic scholars. After that, we have Around the World with reporters. Reporters from around the world tell us what is happening in their corner of the world. Listen to fascinating reports from countries both near and far. Our varied radio productions feature will be next. And our final program this hour is A to Z of Life. The program presents an Islamic Iranian lifestyle in a variety of ways, making use of the ayahs of the Holy Quran as well as inspirational poetry and stories. Stay with us for the next hour.
That was the week that was. Beyond the headlines, we dissect the stories that shaped the past 7 days, from the heart of region to the global stage. God, the compassionate, the merciful. Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to our political chat show, That Was the Week That Was. We look at global politics and issues of the day, and I'm your host, Leila Garcia. With me here in the studio is veteran journalist and political commentator, Miranda Akhshand. Please stay tuned. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks very much indeed.
Today's discussion is about a new survey which has found half of Europeans see Donald Trump as enemy of Europe. A new survey has found that nearly half of Europeans see Donald Trump as an enemy of Europe. Rather, more, the risk of war with Russia has high, and more than two-thirds believe their country would not be able to defend itself in the event of such a war. The nine-country poll from the Paris-based European Affairs Debt Platform, the Grand Continent, also found that nearly three-quarters of respondents wanted their country to stay in the EU, with almost as many saying leaving the Union had harmed the UK. Jean-Yves Dolmagen, a political science professor and founder of the polling agency Cluster 17, said Europe is not only facing growing risk, it is also undergoing a transformation of its historical, geopolitical, and political environment. The overall picture of the survey shows Europe that is anxious, that is deeply aware of its vulnerabilities, and that is struggling to project itself positively into the future. Okay, let's bring in veteran journalist and political commentator Meron Derakhshand.
Thanks for inviting me.
My first question is, the survey has also found a relative majority, 51%, felt the risk of open war with Russia in the coming years was high. Tell us more about that.
Yes, this survey was actually conducted in 9 European countries, namely France, Italy, Spain, Germany, Poland, Portugal, Croatia, Belgium, and the Netherlands. And a majority, or a slight majority, about 51%, felt the risk of open war with Russia in the coming years was high, and 18% considered the risk of war with Russia as very high. So views varied strongly according to proximity to Russia. For example, 77% of respondents in Poland considered the risk of war with Russia to be high, and 54% of the French public considered the risk to be high, 51% in Germany, 39% of the public in Portugal thought the risk of war with Russia was high. Portugal is much further away than Poland, for example. And 34% in Italy felt that way.
Right.
The survey showed that the possibility of direct conflict on the European continent is now widely accepted by the European public.
But the survey also found that confidence in national military capabilities was low everywhere. Can you explain that for us?
Yes, confidence in national military capabilities was low.
Mm-hmm.
And the survey found with 69% of respondents across the 9 European countries said they thought their country was not really or not at all capable of defending itself against Russia.
Right.
French respondents were the most confident, but it remained a minority opinion at 44%.
Mm-hmm.
In Poland, for example, which shares a border with Russia, 58% were not confident. And political science professor and founder of the polling agency, Jean-Yves Dormagen, said, "We're entering an age of danger while feeling a persistent sense of national weakness."
Right.
Feelings of vulnerability were widely shared, according to the survey, with only 12% of respondents saying they did not feel particularly threatened by a raft of sources of insecurity, ranging from technological and military insecurity to energy and to food.
Yeah. The vast majority of respondents across the 9 European countries in the survey backed EU membership. Tell us more about that.
Yes, you're right. The vast majority of those who replied in the 9 countries supported European Union membership. 74% of the European public said they wanted their country to remain in the European bloc.
Yeah.
With this sentiment being highest in Portugal, 90% of the public in Portugal said they wanted their country to remain within the European Union. In Spain, 89% of the public said they wanted Spain to remain in the European Union. The second lowest was in Poland with 68%, and the lowest was actually in France.
Right.
With 61% of the French public saying they wanted France to remain within the EU.
Mm-hmm. What did the survey say about Brexit, the UK's decision to leave the European Union?
Yes, well, that's another point in the survey. Britain's decision to leave the European Union is widely seen in Europe as a failure. 63% of the European public believe Brexit had actually had a negative impact on Britain, and only 19% thought it had been positive. And just 5% thought Brexit had been very positive.
Mm-hmm.
So the vast majority, 63% of the European public, thought Brexit, Britain's decision to leave the European Union, had a negative impact on Britain.
Right. Donald Trump has admitted that the path to peace in Ukraine is unclear. What is the latest on peace negotiation between U.S. and Russia and U.S. and Ukraine?
Donald Trump's special envoy, Steve Witkoff, accompanied by Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, spent nearly 5 hours in talks with President Vladimir Putin at the Kremlin on Tuesday, 2nd of December. Mm-hmm. Moscow later said the meeting had not brought the sides any closer to a peace agreement. But Donald Trump on Wednesday, 3rd of December, described the discussions in Moscow as reasonably good, though he acknowledged that the path ahead for peace in Ukraine remained unclear.
Right.
Speaking to reporters in the Oval Office on Wednesday, 3rd of December, Trump said Putin would like to make a deal. Mm-hmm. But what comes out of that meeting, I can't tell you because it takes two to tango.
I see.
And President Trump said the U.S. had something pretty well worked out with Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, has ruled out giving up territory Ukraine currently holds. And on Wednesday, he said his team was preparing for meetings in the U.S., adding that dialogue with Trump's representatives would continue.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the latest on the peace efforts between U.S. and Russia and
right.
U.S. and Ukraine.
Yeah, I see. There's some anxiety and mistrust among European leaders over Washington's role in the peace negotiation with Russia. Tell us more about that.
Yes, this is a leaked transcript of a high-level call published by the German magazine Der Spiegel.
Mm-hmm.
And it has exposed deep anxiety among European leaders over Washington's role in the peace negotiations with Moscow. The call, held on Monday, 1st of December, included the French President Emmanuel Macron, Germany's Chancellor Friedrich Merz, NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte, and Finland's President Alexander Stubb,
right.
as well as Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine and various other leaders and politicians.
Mm-hmm.
According to the transcript, several participants voiced fears that the United States could abandon Ukraine at a critical moment.
Yeah.
For example, the French President Emmanuel Macron said, "There is a possibility that the United States will betray Ukraine on the issue of territory without providing clarity on security guarantees."
Mm-hmm.
And Macron warned of a great danger for Volodymyr Zelensky if Kiev were left exposed. Now, the German Chancellor Friedrich Merz urged Zelensky to be extremely careful in the coming days. Merz said, "They are playing games both with you and with us." He was apparently referring to Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner,
yeah.
whom Friedrich Merz said they were playing games with both mm-hmm. Zelensky and with the Europeans.
Right.
And Finland's president, Alexander Stubb, appeared to back Friedrich Merz's assessment. So the Finnish president, Alexander Stubb, said, "We cannot leave Ukraine and Volodymyr Zelensky alone with these guys."
Mm-hmm.
So with these guys, he meant Steve Witkoff, President Trump's special envoy, and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner. He said, "We can't leave Ukraine and Volodymyr Zelensky alone with these guys." Presumably, I think he meant Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner.
Yeah. Right.
Now, on Wednesday, the European Commission announced it would move ahead with controversial plans to fund Ukraine with a loan based on Russia's frozen assets.
Mm-hmm.
This is completely illegal and goes against international laws and protocols. In a concession to concerns raised by Belgium, Belgium is the host of most of these Russian assets. The European Union executive has also proposed the option of an EU loan mm-hmm. based on common borrowing. EU leaders will be asked to decide on the options later this month as Ukraine faces a funding emergency now. Russia's Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev has unequivocally stated that if the European Commission's plan to fund Ukraine with Russia's frozen assets is in effect a declaration of war on Russia.
I see. Listening to the Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran, English Radio. This program entitled, That Was the Week That Was. The EU's foreign foreign policy chief Kaya Kallas has said the fierce talks between the Russian President Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump's special envoy Steve Witkoff will pile pressure on Ukraine to make concessions. What is that about?
Yes, the European Union foreign policy chief Kaya Kallas, referring to Steve Witkoff, Vladimir Putin meeting, said, "I'm afraid that all the pressure will be put on Ukraine to make concessions."